This is Women's Rights, a podcast about women's ordination written and produced by students at Smith College.
Hi, I'm Anne.
I'm Grace.
I'm Megan.
And I'm Brooke.
We're your hosts for this episode of Women's Rights. This season, we are exploring the story of women's ordination in Conservative Judaism, the United Church of Christ, the Evangelical Lutheran Church of America, the Buddhist Churches of America, also known as Shin Buddhism, and among evangelical Protestant denominations. To do so, we've interviewed women in each of these traditions, talking about women's ordination activism and the experience of being ordained. In this episode, we're going to look at the history of women's ordination in Shin Buddhism and where it goes next. We're going to talk about the history of Shin Buddhism, how it got to the U.S., and talk with Reverend Dr. Mitsumi Wondra about her experience as an ordained priest in the Buddhist Churches of America, the largest Shin Buddhism organization in the U.S.
We asked Reverend Wondra to give us some background on Shin Buddhism and to tell us more about her experience.
So going back, let me explain my even we say Buddhism, there's many, many Buddhism, right? Probably you know, you might have read some books. Even Christianity, I'm not in the right position to talk about, but there is a lot of schools and then, right? Sects, whatever. So I am under, of course, Buddhism is studied by Shakyamuni Buddha in India. After he passed away, he was a human being. After he passed away, there are kind of two, you know, schools were established. One is Theravada Buddhism, which is, in other words, Hinayana. And then Mahayana is a bigger vehicle. I belong to bigger vehicle. That means everybody can share the Dharma and pursue that enlightenment together. And under the Mahayana, there's many, many schools again. I belong to Pure Land Buddhism. Okay, I don't go farther because I don't want it to confused. Okay, so this is where I am. And my background is I was born in Japan. And then Japan is a Buddhist country, right? Thailand, all the East Asian countries. Probably 90% of Buddhism. And then my family members also belong to the Pure Land Buddhism. And then I was very happy to be born there. And in Japan is sort of not, you know, per, kind of selection of the faith is per family. Because my grandfather, mother, and then my father and mother belong to this school, I automatically belong to that. Very rare. I don't like it. I'll go to a different one. They don't do like this. So automatically, I belong to that Theravada Buddhism. And then eventually is a Shin Buddhism. My family all were Shin Buddhist. Shin Buddhist, founded by Shinran. So since I was a child, I sat down in front of the family altar, and we offer the flowers, we offer the food, we offer that a light candle, and then we chant together, and then putting our hands together, and always gratitude, feel grateful for what we have, we receive. That's our culture, and then religious faith. So reciting the Buddha, we call it Namo Amida Butsu, all the time. So they put me in the kindergarten. Kindergarten is also kind of Buddhist kindergarten. And then we had a weekly service. And then I went to the regular elementary school. Elementary school, faith, nothing. But starting from the middle school and high school, college, I went to Kyoto Girls High School. Middle school, high school, and the university, just like Smith College. It's a women's college, and then liberal arts. I studied English literature. So again, this one is also a Buddhist school. It's a liberal arts. There is a many department, not only religious and faith. I took that English, and they had also science at that time, not computer yet, but many department. And again, we had a class, religion class, once a week. And we had once a week in service in the morning. So my environment, and I'm very fortunate to be able to hear the Buddha Dharma At least once a week. At that time, I didn't pay attention, not at all. I couldn't understand what the meaning is. But now, I really appreciate the opportunity I had since I was a child.
While Buddhism itself has been around for 2,500 years, Shin Buddhism was founded in Japan about 800 years ago by Shinran Shonin in an attempt to make the Dharma, or the teachings, more accessible to women and the peasantry. Leadership in Buddhism was in the hands of ordained monks, reflecting the expectation of social order set by the patriarchal social systems all across the world, and specifically in Asia. It wasn't until the end of the 19th century that Shin Buddhism became established in America, a religious institution that is known today as the Buddhist Churches of America. The Buddhist Churches of America have provided a place for women in worship for as long as they have existed, yet their ordination of women has come quite recently as the result of influential social movements and Buddhism's increasingly attractive spiritual nature in America. Now, I'll turn to Grace to give a brief history on the Buddhist Churches of America and Japan.
The origin of Buddhist Churches of America, also known as the BCA, is tied deeply to the history of Japanese Americans. The BCA sought to build the Japanese American community and provide religious education in an era when the U.S. government sought to cut off ties between Japanese Americans and the Japanese government and identity. The organization was built during the wave of Japanese immigration to the United States before and during World War I. And many leaders were targeted during the American incarceration of Japanese Americans in internment camps during World War II. We asked Reverend Wandra about the BCA and how it was impacted during World War II.
United States and Japan, they are enemies. So they were sent to camp, to middle of nowhere. So they have to abandon all the land and all the house. They stayed, they only carried one suitcase, I remember. And then they went to that different state of middle of nowhere, like Arizona or desert area. So they still, I think it's still a couple years.
Oh yeah.
A lot of people, right? So many Japanese American born in camp too, on the camp. So they have a very difficult time. After that, camp restriction has been, open up, and they try to go back to California, but they lost all the land. There is no place to live, right? So they started rebuilding or using the temple for their house. So they live in the temple, right? Mm-hmm.
The fight for inclusion of Japanese Americans in the United States made building the BCA challenging, but the struggles that Japanese Americans faced brought them closer to their temples. The BCA was able to offer a safe space for the formerly incarcerated to live while they rebuilt their lives. But the fight against racism and xenophobia complicated this process. The BCA continues to provide a spiritual home to many. When Reverend Wondra's mother died, she was living in the United States and hadn't been connected to Shin Buddhism since she left Japan as a young adult. She felt spiritually adrift. We asked her about her experience returning to this practice through the BCA.
But I was missing my mother so bad. And I asked myself, what should I do? Do I go to some regular doctor, psychologist, or psychiatrist? I knew that the cause is losing my mother. So it's funny. I thought, I want to go to the temple. Which temple? The only thing is a Pure Land Buddhism temple, right? So I found it. There is no internet. The only thing I had is a yellow page telephone book you have never seen before. Very thick telephone directory. And I found the temple. I went there. That's my beginning of Buddhism. So when I showed up and I attended the first service with my husband, the minister welcomed me very much, very welcoming.
We also asked Reverend Wandra what it was like reconnecting with her mother through spirituality.
It really hit me. I thought, mother is here. Oh, what a wonderful. This is what I wanted. That's the beginning of my re-entering the Buddhism again.
Next, Megan will discuss Reverend Wondra's experience as an ordained minister.
Throughout her tenure as an ordained priest in Shin Buddhism, Reverend Dr. Mitsumi Wondra has been lucky enough not to experience any discrimination. In her own words,
you know, being a full-time minister, women minister, in here, United States, North America, in my temple, I have never felt that I am discriminated. I'm very grateful BCA, this temple, allow me to do everything. No restriction, not at all.
During her interview, Reverend Wondra also revealed the shockingly small percentage of ordained women ministers.
So there are 32 full-time Kakyoshin ministers. Among 32, there are 6 women ministers. Mm-hmm. So only 18% now.
Though she has never experienced any personal discrimination, the numbers reveal there is still much to do in order to increase the number of ordained women ministers in Shin Buddhism.
Looking forward, Reverend Wondra expressed the importance of sharing her knowledge with the next generation.
But I would love to share what I learned with the next generation. That's my responsibility as well. First of all, share the Dharma, Buddha Dharma, and share that our founder Shinran's teaching with everyone, not only women and men and all the human beings, you know. And then just share the quality, woman quality, with the next generation of women.
As you can see, the future of Shin Buddhism lies in both female and male priesthood. As the denomination grapples with sexism and the long legacy of internment, leaders hope to build a brighter future. Next time on Women's Rights, we'll be looking at women's ordination among evangelical Protestants.
That concludes our podcast for today. Our theme music was Bird Therapist by Craig MacArthur, used by an attribution non-commercial share-alike Creative Commons license. Special thanks to Reverend Dr. Mitsumi Wondra. Also thanks to Dan Bennett and Meredith Richer of the Smith Learning Research and Technology team. And thanks to the Religion Department that supports public-facing student writing at Smith College. Tune in next time on Women's Rights.